Welcome to the Creative South Podcast. I'm your host, Jason Frostholm. This week, I'm talking with UX designer Chris Thomas. We chat about how he went from dropping out of HVAC school to playing harmonica in touring bands to his career in UX design, how working as a designer at churches taught him how to think about UX design through the customer's eyes, the importance of design leadership, and being intentional in your design, and more, all right after this. It's no secret that I love Jack Prince. They're a longtime sponsor of the podcast and Creative South. Plus, they do great work. Whether they're making our pop-up displays and tablecloths or printing notebooks, Jack Prince is always there when we need them. This year, they are printing new Creative South t-shirts for me and the podcast stickers. They have a coupon code on the back that gives you a great discount on all of their products, just in time for Creative South. Speaking of stickers, Jack Prince will print any kind, shape, size, or stock, including full-color stickers with full-color liner prints, for you to use as product labels, promotions, bumper stickers, hang tags, business cards, and more. Right now, you can get 500 3x3-inch die-cut stickers, starting at $149. Plus, Jack Prince is giving Creative South Podcast listeners 15% off all orders over $25 when you use promo code SOUTH15OFF at checkout. Visit jackprince.com for your next order of stickers, prints, or whatever you need today. If you like the Creative South Podcast, please consider supporting us on Patreon. Every dollar helps us cover hosting costs, upgrade equipment, and keep the podcast going. With options starting at just $1 per month, you can help support the podcast and even wind up with some cool Creative South Podcast swag. When you become a Creative South patron, you'll get access to exciting Creative South news before anyone else, a shout out on the podcast thanking you for your support, Creative South Podcast stickers and t-shirts. So please help support the podcast by becoming a patron over at patreon.com/creativesouth. Chris, thanks for joining me.
Yeah, man. Thanks, dude. Thanks for having me.
Or I should say thanks for joining me again.
Yes. Yeah. I think the first time I was definitely awkward for sure. So thanks. Thanks for having me back and trying round two.
I live in a world of being awkward. So that's my comfort zone.
Well, and I'm still getting used to like the whole Skype thing when I can stare at myself in the little right hand corner. Uh-huh. And I'm like, man, do I really look that weird talking? Like, it's just seeing them. Anyway, yeah. Thanks for having me back and not returning my calls or steps.
No problem. So let's dive in. And where did you grow up? We'll do the quick recap of this.
Yeah, absolutely. So I grew up in Blue Ridge, Georgia. McKaysville. So literally the movie Deliverance was filmed like 5-10 minutes away from my house. So, yeah.
So you've heard every dueling banjo joke there is.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's, I had a very thick accent as a kid. When we moved to Atlanta, I think when I was like, 5 or 6, I had this horrible accent, and I remember kids making fun of me, and I was like, what's wrong with the way I talk? It's crazy.
That thick backwoods country, almost Appalachian accent.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, now I don't have an accent at all. People are just like, oh, you're from Georgia. I'm like, yeah. What's the problem? So I think I sound Southern, but other people don't.
Gotcha. So growing up, what were you into?
Man, I was pretty much into just golf. And I was raised in a pastor's house. So my grandparents raised me. And so my grandfather was a pastor. I thought he was a golf pro because he played golf most of his church career. I guess I can say that now. So I was like, man, I want to do what he does. And as a kid, being a country kid, I guess. I mean, grew up just playing outside, playing on like a little three wheel kind of thing. So it was kind of a fun childhood of just being a kid. And then when I moved to the city, it kind of all changed because I was just like, this is, you know, you can just go out and play in the woods and not worry about it. And then you get moved to the city. And I feel like big city or whatever. It's kind of like, you know, just your whole world changes. You, you know, you don't have a creek or anything to play in, or
sure.
You know, you can't hit golf balls randomly into the woods because there's somebody else's house on the other side of the woods. So yeah, I mean, it basically just, I was just all over the place playing sports and, all the way, gosh, I played golf and baseball, because my mom thought, that I was going to get hurt playing football. And
understandable.
So, yeah. You know, and it's kind of funny. It's just, you know, I wanted to tell my mom, do you see how much padding is on me? Like, you know, so I grew up kind of just, playing baseball and golf, and, it was great. I mean, cause like, you know, golf, you just play with your grandfather and you play with all these old people and
sure.
You hear like all the great, you know, cheesy golf jokes. And then, you know, then playing baseball, played travel ball and, you know, just, I really honestly thought, I was going to be some sort of athlete or in sports somehow, because that's all I wanted to do.
Sure.
And,
Were you into art at all as a kid?
No, like it was kind of one of those weird things. Like, you know, it wasn't a strict household, but it was one of those households, you know, being in a Southern Baptist home, you don't really, you know, you can't drink, you can't dance. I think I
recommend kids drink anyways.
Right. Just, well, yeah. I mean, you know, it is what it is. I mean,
sure.
Hey, it fixes teeth, apparently, like teething.
Okay.
Yeah.
So does Benadryl.
I have a 2-year-old. Not that I let my 2-year-old drink. I'm just saying. I thought about it. It's just like, man.
Benadryl works pretty well too.
Yeah. So I'm probably going to get in trouble for saying that. But yeah, so grew up in a household where it's like you can't dance, can't drink. You know, obviously, you know, kids don't smoke cigarettes either. But and so like art was kind of one of those things where, I guess, quote, our art was music, right?
Okay.
And so my grandfather was, he played in gospel bands, and it was just kind of weird to kind of hear, you know, different stories about him almost being in the Oak Ridge Boys, right? Or, you know, it's like, what, you could have been singing Elvira. That's
I was crazy. About to say, would your dad or your grandfather have done the bass part of the Oompa Mamao part.
Yeah, exactly. He would have done the bass. So they asked him to be the bass singer. And my grandmother was like, nope, she wasn't like the dream crusher or anything. It was just kind of like, hey, you got a family of, I think, 4. Yeah. And so, yeah, it's just funny. He ended up sticking around and had his own like TV show.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Every Saturday night after the Grand Ole Opry. This was back when there's only 3 channels. But
yeah, I was about to say.
Yeah. But yeah. So, I mean, I grew up around music and really just that whole vibe and like art really just, you know, I think I had crayons, but I wasn't the kid that was always scribbling. I think I was a kid always throwing rocks through windows and stuff like that. So,
well, what type of music were you into as a kid?
Man, so it's kind of a weird, so it's kind of weird. So when we moved down to Atlanta, you know, I grew up around bluegrass and, you know, Southern gospel music, but then I got my first taste of like harmonica blues music when I was about 5 years old. And our neighbor was this really cool black guy. He was a preacher actually at the black church down the end of the street.
Okay.
And he played harmonica. And so I, you know, growing up, I always had this weird, eclectic kind of vibe where I loved bluegrass, you know, banjos and mandolin and all that. But then something about the harmonica or B3 organ or like just this crazy guitar sound. And yeah, I just, you know, until I was like, gosh, I still listen to both sides of those music. Cause, it's just something crazy that, that I still take with me. Like the harmonica thing, the guy actually taught me how to play, and I've been playing harmonica, I guess now for, I guess I'm dating myself, 30 years. So it's kind of weird to still be able to do that. And so, yeah, I mean, you know, from the art side and like design, I guess it was already, you know, it wasn't drawing.
It wasn't a part of your life, really.
Yeah. It was just more, I was more of the artist on the music side, I guess.
Gotcha. So when you get to like high school and all, what are you starting to get interested in at that point? What are you wanting to do?
You know, I hated school. Like I wanted to be out of school so bad. I just wanted to either play baseball or, you know, really just play golf or do something that didn't involve reading. I just hated to read. I had a severe dyslexia problem and, you know, just didn't like, you know, I was an audible learner. So back then nobody knew what that meant. They're just like, you know, oh, you can't read this or whatever. So it was a real struggle, but I started to kind of get into this whole design thing when I went to this random, design class, and they had like, I remember like it was yesterday, they had the old Macintosh computers that you could see through. And I'm like, what is this? Like, you know, cause I didn't have a computer in my house or any of that kind of stuff. And, this teacher really pulled me aside and he's like, you can move these shapes around, you can do this and do that. And, my first design program ever was a Corel Draw. And yeah, I mean,
the choice of screen printers everywhere.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I created like my first t-shirt, I think, I was a junior in high school, and it just something about that where you could just create something and then put it on a shirt or print it out. Like I never thought about that. Never really, you know, thought about how things were made.
Sure.
And so I started to learn about, you know, screen printing, like the t-shirts and stuff like that. And it was just like one of those things where it's like, okay, I'm using my hands and kind of like, you know, almost like a tradesman at that point. I'm like, okay, I kind of dig this, but you know, my parents are, you know, they have no idea, you know, what screen printing is or making t-shirts. They, you know, I just came home, I was like, oh, I learned how to make a t-shirt today. And, you know, my mom's like, well, you know, you can't make money doing that, right? And I'm like, what are you talking about? This would be amazing. Think of all, everybody wears shirts. Like you can make, you know? And, so it's one of those things where just like, okay, well, this is not like a viable thing. Like design is not a thing that I can make a career or any of that kind of stuff. And
so your parents weren't exactly supportive of it.
No. And so secretly I would learn, you know, Photoshop. I think back then it was just called Photoshop. And, you know, that kind of blew my mind a little bit just to be able to manipulate different things like photos and all that kind of stuff. And just kind of got me just really in this whole different world of like, okay, how do I learn colors and all this kind of stuff. And, and really it's just, I'm self-taught. You know, it's funny looking back, like, you know, my stepdad, he is a, or, you know, dad, I call him dad. And, he actually was a draftsman. And he designed, he literally like, think about this. This is what blows my mind when I think about it. He would draw full scale drawings of submarines by hand. Right. And all the detail, all the shading and everything else. And I'm thinking, man, I missed, it's like, you know, because, you know, he knew the struggle of being a designer and a draftsman. I guess he didn't want me to go through the same thing because at that time, you know, computers and all that wasn't going to take over his job. And so I remember kind of getting, you know, just interested in that design after watching what he was doing. And then I'm like, well, I could kind of do this in Photoshop and all this kind of stuff. So I think it just kind of sparked my interest probably my junior and senior year. And, you know, I had this strong desire to go to University of Georgia.
And, sure. Good school.
Yeah. Go Dawgs. And promptly found out that I was told no. I guess I guess it helps if you take an actual algebra class during high school.
Yeah,
it was, and I didn't know any better. My parents didn't know any better. But the next thing I know, because my parents, all they know is like tradesman stuff. The next thing I know, I'm at Athens Tech HVAC school, and I'm like, yeah, this is not what I want to do.
Sure.
So, and I think we talked about this on the side. It's like, okay, in hindsight, I could have been making pretty good money as a plumber or HVAC guy. And
yeah,
if there's any plumbers or HVAC guys, they're probably listening to this going, yeah, told you so. But
especially this time of year when the HVAC guys charge double.
Oh yeah, exactly. It's like, oh, what? How can I charge double? Like, when can, you know,
yeah,
it's
yeah.
like, there's no designed route. There's no, you know, that kind of thing. So
it's hot up in your attic. I'm going to charge you double for design. Doesn't work.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, it's like, oh, you got a leak. Yeah. That's going to be a $500 logo.
Yeah.
Today. Yeah. It's like, and so it just wasn't my thing. Like I'm not a craftsman by any means. I'm actually the worst handyman possible. I put shelves together that are inside out. Like, you know, it's the wood that's supposed to be on the inside. Somehow I'll put it on the outside. And
gotcha.
You know, this is before like raw wood look cool. And my wife's like, that's backwards. I'm like, no, it looks great. It's natural.
Yeah. It's particle board.
Yeah, exactly. And so, you know, I'm
we got school. It from IKEA. It's particle board.
Exactly. I need to call TaskRabbit the next time. But So I'm in this HVAC school, and you know, the first thing they have you learn is AutoCAD, and I'm like, well, I don't even know what AutoCAD is. I know what Photoshop is and what CorelDRAW is. So I'm trying to like find somebody that knows what graphic design is, because I know what that means. And
sure.
Nobody was around. And it was kind of like, okay, well, this isn't going to work out. And so I ended up, yeah, I think quitting school like after 6 weeks, and I got my little like AutoCAD taste. I was like, okay, this is cool, you know, or whatever, but I'm not going to be, you know, changing out AC units in people's houses. Like, this is not what I want to do.
Right. When you drop out, what do you do? You got to make a living somehow or get an education somehow.
Yeah.
And I'm sure your parents were none too thrilled.
Well, they didn't know. That was great. So thanks for telling them just now. No, I'm just kidding. they didn't find out until
they didn't learn after 20 years, almost 20 years.
Yeah, right. They're like, wait a minute, can you fix our HVAC? No, I'll do it later. You know, yeah. So they found out after the semester ended. My mom called to get the grades, and they're like, yeah, you quit. Like, you know, not even, you know, and. So I quit school. The only thing I knew how to do, and this is going to sound crazy, was play harmonica. That was one thing. I was like, well, I know I can play in bands. I know I can play music. So I'll play in, you know, places like the 40 Watt and Taste the World. And, I got to play on the stage of, you know, just incredible people, at the Georgia Theater stage, which was nuts. And, you know, so I'm just playing around town, and the other thing that I know how to do is golf. And so I found this driving range that I could work at, and I could just hit golf balls all day. And I was actually pretending to be a quote golf pro or a golf teacher, right?
Sure.
Because I was like, well, I know how to teach people how to hit a golf ball, you know, that kind of thing. And so it was like, I got to figure something out. And so I always had a love for graphic design. I would play in these bands, and I would see like these really cool band posters. I would see all these like just great designs on marquees and all this kind of stuff. And there was I can't even remember the print shop in Athens, but I went in, I was like, hey, I want to be a graphic designer. And back then, you know, you had your portfolio, but it, you know, I didn't know what a portfolio was, right?
Sure.
It's like you're supposed to carry a notebook in and you're supposed to show off your work. I didn't have that. I just kind of was like, well, I made this t-shirt. Here, I'm actually wearing my t-shirt that I made in high school. I made this, like, does this count? And, you know, I think for a semester, I feel like it was just springtime. They just gave me a chance and they're just like, you know, at the end of it, they're like, look, you just don't have what it takes at all to be a designer or, you know, a print, you know, screen printer or any of that. And so, you know, there I was just kind of like, okay, so I can't play music. I can't play, you know, golf, and, you know, that's not a viable thing. And obviously design is kind of out the window right now. And oddly enough, I went to work for a home builder and
okay.
landed a job designing floor plans. And okay. oddly
so
enough,
putting those AutoCAD skills to work.
Yeah, exactly. That 6 weeks in HVAC school really helped out. So I went to work for this home builder and it just became repetition. They're just like, hey, design the floor plan, design this kind of thing. And I started to like learn about interior design, how the layout of the house, how to structure a house, there's so many, and I'm probably boring you at this point. There's so many things to building a house when you design it. And you just don't think about those things. It's like,
sure.
And, you know, years later, I think about where I'm at today. I think those little foundation things of like working at the home builder going, okay, which way does the yard drain and where should we put the front door? You know, that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I'm working for this home builder, designing floor plans, and they had an opening in the marketing department. And I said, look, you know, I love graphic design. I'm trying really hard. Can I help? You know, can I do something? And so basically it was the best of both worlds. They would let me work Monday through Wednesday. And then Wednesday night, I would get on a tour bus and tour Thursday through Friday or okay. Thursday through Sunday and come back to work on Monday. And so I'm learning how to do marketing design. I'm learning how to do AutoCAD and design these floor plans. And then also just playing music. Like it was awesome, you know?
Sure.
And so I start to kind of get really into the whole, like, how do you market things and how do you, you know, this was before like 2002, 2000, where everybody could buy a house, right?
Sure.
And the marketing of that was just like, oh, you can buy it. here's our home builder. And so they just allowed me to design their advertising for these big signs. Mm-hmm. And I started to really just kind of fall in love with it. And so I ended up leaving that company and joining the third largest engineering firm in the world. And they're like, hey, you know, we see you got marketing skills. We see that you have these drawing skills. You know how to do AutoCAD. We want you to kind of help us develop this creative system and all this kind of stuff. And I'm like, what? I was like, this is not even what I signed up for. And because I wanted to really get into advertising and all this kind of stuff, but it was just so hard to do, right? Because you sure. just, you know, you don't have an advertising degree. There was no, you know, Don Draper, you know, mentor around. And yeah. So I didn't realize what I was learning. And, you know, at the time I was a newlywed. And so I'm like, look, I'm just going to support my wife, you know, however I can. I've had so many odd jobs, but, you know, it always went back to design somehow. It always went back to, you know, either AutoCAD or engineering, or whatever. And so when I landed at this big engineering firm, and I would do anything they told me to do because I didn't want to lose the job. It was just like,
sure.
You know, you're not 23 years old, end up somehow, in this incredible company. And so I'm sitting there and I'm starting to learn how people use software and how people communicate and all this kind of stuff. And they're like, hey, we want you to, and this is back when Microsoft SharePoint, you know, comes out. And this is what I love about SharePoint. It's like, or Microsoft, they're like, hey, we got something brand new. It's the year 2006, but we have SharePoint 2004.
Yeah.
And it's brand new. And I'm like, what? You know, it's 2 years old. But so I'm sitting there and I'm starting to learn process and like how people use software. And I'm still trying to figure out, okay, this design sucks. Like this interface sucks. Like, how do we fix it? And I started to design interfaces for SharePoint. And it's kind of, it's weird to think back about the little small foundations that I learned through that. Mm-hmm. And things start to roll and things start to go. And I'm just like, man, this is awesome. Like,
well, so let me interrupt you. How at this point are you understanding that structure of how things work and how user flow is? And I mean, is it just trial and error, or is it there just something intuitive about it that made sense to you?
It was at first, it was literally trial and error. Like I would literally, if you want a book that bores you to death, like read the SharePoint how-to guide, because there's no,
I'll pass.
Yeah. There's no YouTube. There's no, like, there's no nothing. And I started to understand, like, this is before like Google Docs, right? Where sure. You could collaborate. And I remember learning about all these, you know, they didn't call them use cases. They were talking about how customer profiles, like how would somebody use this or whatever. And it just became one of those natural things. The way I thought was like, this is how you do this. This is how you do that. And then designing the interface to make it look, you know, cause I was using colors that I knew how to use. I knew how to use logos and I knew how to use graphics. And I'm like, hey, we could brand this SharePoint thing. And so things are going really well and the market crashes. And so I don't, you know, I'm sitting there, I don't have a job. I get let go along with like 10,000 other people. And my wife and I had just moved into like a brand new house and
perfect like, timing.
Yeah. Yeah. And we're just like, what in the world? And I remember we were about to, you know, we just thought we were about to like start our lives. Right. And then all of a sudden just upside down. Sure. And I remember kind of just going, okay, well, what do we do? And I was still playing music and I'm still kind of in the music scene. And I was telling a buddy of mine, you know, what had just happened and what am I going to do? I really didn't like my job. It wasn't something I was passionate about. And he's like, look, why don't you go on tour with us for, you know, I think it was like 6 or 8 weeks or something like that. It was a little small tour. It was, it was with the band Third Day and Need to Breathe and a band called Revive. And, so this, you know, my friend, that played guitar for this band called Revive from Australia was just like, you know, come and hang out, just get your bearings straight. Maybe you play a couple, you know, songs with us with a harmonica. That'd be fun, you know, whatever. And so I go on the road and this passion again for graphic design comes back out because, you know, I don't know if you know Third Day or Need to Breathe, but they're brilliant when it comes to like putting on a show. Like
sure.
they're really good at it. And so I'm sitting there and I'm watching Need to Breathe. They're not as big, you know, this is back when they're not Need to Breathe. Right. And they're trying to get people to learn, you know, see who they are. And man, they're putting on this incredible show with like a really small budget. Mm-hmm. And then I see Third Day with a giant budget and how they, the whole experience. And so I started to learn that whole experience thing. I'm like, this this, something about this just like excites me. And so randomly, I get a phone call from a guy, and he's like, "Hey, I got your number. And you know, I work at a church. Mm-hmm. We need a creative director. Would you be interested?" And I remember just at that moment going, I didn't even know churches needed a creative director, right? It's sure. Like, you know, because I grew up in a Southern Baptist church where like the most creative thing was like, we got blue hymnals, right?
And
it's
ooh, like, fancy.
Yeah, it's like, wait a minute.
And that probably caused a controversy too.
Oh, man. You mean to tell me we got rid of the red ones? No. We just put them next to each other. So we just had variations of color. I'm like, I mean, so in my mind, I'm like, what? And I was like, what do you want me to do? And he's like, well, let's have a talk. And so basically, we've all been there to those boring churches that just kind of, you know, they don't get your attention. And it's like, oh my gosh, you know, when is this guy going to stop like talking at me and like, you know,
sure,
screaming and yelling and everything else. And it kind of explained, he's like, look, we just need somebody to give us help us with our experience when people walk into the doors. And so I just took the opportunity and started to learn from different churches. And I know this is like, it's kind of a weird, just, you know, whether you want to, you know, I know a lot of people go, well, you're talking about God and everything else. Well, so the whole thing is like, you know, God strung this whole entire story together. That's
sure, sure.
What's insane about it, right? Because I can't write this stuff. I can't go from, you know, from high school hating school to playing in music with incredible people that are now on the radio and all this kind of stuff. And, you know, to where I'm at today.
Right.
And so I'm starting to learn, you know, and if people work in the church, and I know there's a lot of guys that work in the church that listen to this podcast, but the thing about it is when you work at a church and you have to be creative to get people in the doors, mm-hmm. every single week you're having to create these sermon packages, right? And let's, you know, Easter and Christmas are like our Super Bowl Sundays, right?
Sure, sure.
And so we have to make this experience because
when people like me go to church.
Exactly. Yeah, yeah. We called them Christers back then. So it's like they only came in Christmas and Easter.
Yeah.
And, but the thing is, we weren't trying to manufacture something. We were trying to just give you a feeling of like, hey, if you want to go to a concert on Wednesday night, you should have the same excellence on Sunday morning. Why not? Why can't you have a good time at church? Like, why does it have to be boring? And so I just started to learn how to put sermon packages together, like with After Effects and Photoshop. And then I would learn Premiere, and I'm just like, man, this is great. And then I would take, you know, and learn all this 3D stuff, and it just became natural. And
sure,
I'm like, well, hey, we could market this stuff and have this whole theme. And so it started to become one of those things where it just kind of built over the time, and it just kind of connected everything from all the shows that I've ever played or all the concerts that I've ever seen, where it's like, oh, this is a thing, like it's on purpose. Right. And so I did that for 10 years. I started out in a church of like 30 people. Mm-hmm. They grew to 300. And then 10 years later, I'm working at a church of 15,000 people per week, you know.
Jeez. Or,
yeah. And, you know, when you think about that of like, you have a large facility, you have wayfinding signage, right? You know, where to drop off their kids. You have, you know, all these experiences, all these digital experiences going around, and this huge, massive building that I'm in charge of all the graphics and all the design and how people come onto the campus and how they get off the campus and all that. I started to learn what experience meant, right?
Sure. And I'm curious how, when you have that much experiential stuff going on in so many different facets, how are you tying them all together? So they're cohesive. So they don't, I mean, I know there's branding and, you know, you can unify some look and feel, but look and feel versus experience are two different things.
Right.
And, you know, you've got to be able to communicate that story and communicate that message and be holistic. How are you translating all of that stuff?
So I learned like a valuable lesson. So if you're a new person that's never stepped foot into church, right?
Sure.
It's the most scariest moment because you feel like you're being judged when you even pull into the parking lot, right?
Sure.
And so how I tied all that together was like, if I were in that person's shoes, how would I want to be perceived when I drove up, right? Mm-hmm. It's as simple as, hey, if you're a guest, throw your flashers on, right? It was like, okay, well, I'm a guest. I'm going to throw my flashers on. And that experience starts right then and there. As soon as they put their flashers on, I had about 100 different volunteers where if they saw flashers, they were going to pay special attention to those people, right? Mm-hmm. And we paid special attention to everybody, but we wanted you to feel welcome, right? Mm-hmm. And how we tied that together was, okay, we weren't like abrasive or anything weird. We're just, hey, it's your first time, that kind of thing. And we gave them this orange, I think it was actually blue. It's like a blue pamphlet. And mm-hmm. people knew that if you were carrying a blue pamphlet, that you were new, right? Mm-hmm. And so everybody on campus was going to treat that person like royalty, right? Well, we started to gather that experience and go, okay, we don't want to freak them out. We don't want them, you know, to get scared off and be like, whoa, these people are too much. We just wanted to give them the experience of like, if the same experience that they would get at Disney, right?
Sure.
You don't feel threatened. You don't feel like people are selling you stuff. We just wanted you to feel welcomed, right? Mm-hmm. And how I tied all that in was, okay, you see a sign that says, you know, Easter, perfect example, right? You come in, you see Easter, you see digital signage, like all these TVs. And then you see, you know, basically when you walk into the auditorium, the colors and everything else, the mood is all connected. And I know mm-hmm. we talked about branded and everything else, but we would literally brand the experience of how somebody should feel, right?
Okay.
But, and so like Christmas, we would even pump in like the air fresheners that smell like cookies, right? Because uh-huh. we want people to feel like, oh, it's Christmas, right? It feels mm-hmm. like it. And so how I'd string everything together is just think about step by step by step and really just kind of going, okay, how do we make people feel welcome, right? Mm-hmm. And so there was an agency, a guy that owned an agency in our church that saw what I was doing. And he's like, hey, can you build a prototype for us? And I was like, I don't even know what that is. and so he explained it. And this is about 7 years ago. And to think about 7 years ago, there's not really a lot of touch screens around. I mean, the iPhone's only been around 10 years, right?
Right.
And so he's like, look, you know, we're doing this automated bank thing for a pretty large bank. And we just want you to build a prototype where somebody presses a button, they get a reaction, they get their money. We just want to walk them through the experience of depositing a check and getting money, all that kind mm-hmm. of stuff. He's like, and I was like, well, I don't even know how to do that. He's like, yeah, you do. He's like, use After Effects, use Keynote as trigger points, and you're done. And so I spent the weekend doing it. And he's like, hey, do you want to, at the time, it wasn't called user experience or anything like that. It was like, do you want to go to the customer interviews and the customer review of this prototype? I was like, yeah, absolutely.
So this is like a focus group, essentially.
Exactly. Yeah. And so, and I'm sitting there and it's like a two-way mirror. They can't see me. And
sure.
And they have this, I don't even remember the touchscreen. I think it was like a Dell or something in the room. And there's this guy standing up there. And he's like, hey, there's going to be somebody in that's going to come in and explain this whole thing. And this lady walks in and starts to tell the story of what the focus group is going to do. The customer walkthrough is going to do. And they're like, hey, so just pretend that you're getting money, blah, blah, blah. How would you do that? And mm-hmm. One after another person would do it. And all of a sudden, like something had happened, like in my brain going, this is amazing. Like, I could just see the reaction of a product. I don't even, at the in my mind, I wouldn't even say even the word product.
Product.
Yeah. It was like, I don't know what this is, but I'm seeing like a response. Like, usually in church and all that kind of stuff, I can see a response when I create a great video. Mm-hmm. Maybe, right? It's like, you know, I don't get the response. And I asked my buddy, I was like, what is this? And he's like, well, he's like, he's like, I think at the time he said it was customer experience design. And sure. I don't think he even used the word design. He's like, yeah, this is just a customer experience. And I was like, well, how do I get into it? And so actually he pulled me into his agency and taught me how to do websites. And at the time they were dabbling in iPhone apps. And I started to learn how people use technology and how people use the web. And so I'm sitting there in this church and I'm just like, you know, okay, I think I'm in love with this whole customer thing and this feedback thing I'm getting. And how do I do that? And so while I'm still working at the church, there was a couple of folks that I started to learn from, and I have never met him face to face. Joel Buchman had his talk on Netflix, right, on how people do design and everything else.
Sure.
And then he talked about this guy named Ted Boda, which he's the guy that created Keynote, which blew my mind. And then you're looking at all these Google designers and all these Apple designers, and you know, you start to see how Steve Jobs is presenting these new devices and all these kinds of things. And I started to learn about UX from Apple. Like, that's who created the word UX, is the, you know, the guy there.
Yeah.
And so I started to learn just that night and trying to figure it out. And I started to get an actual real portfolio together. And I was working at this little small agency, and I would do websites and everything else. And so I told my wife, I was like, I think I'm ready for a change. Like, I've been doing this church thing for 10 years. I'm kind of, you know, burnt out, and, you know, it's just time for that kind of, you know, transition. And so I put my resume and portfolio in at State Farm, which is kind of weird. But then somebody,
friend of mine, a big tech lab, don't they?
Yeah, they do. And I didn't even realize that. A friend of mine was like, hey, they're standing up this UX practice in Atlanta. You should see if you can get on the ground floor. And I did. Uh-huh. I think I was employee number 32 for their UX, you know, team.
Oh, wow.
And so they allowed me, they hired me as a senior UX designer. They're like, look, you have chops. We're just going to, you know, refine those. And I started to learn from a lot of different folks at State Farm and outside of State Farm, and started to learn about the automated home and connected car and connected home and all these kind of devices, and started really understanding, okay, the stuff that I've been doing since like, SharePoint 2004 is the same stuff that I'm doing in 2014, right? Or 13.
Sure.
Wait a minute. This all makes sense to me. Like, I enjoy connecting all these pieces and looking at user flows and the whole experience design from church and all that kind of stuff. And I just started to geek out. Like, I just started to just anything UX, anything that, you know, pertained to it. I was just like, I want to know more. I want to know how people, you know, I listened to this guy talk. His name is Jared Spool, and he talked about the experience of the GE designer that designed the ones that designed the X-ray machines for kids, right? The MRI machine, right? And
sure.
So he talked about the MRI machine, how he didn't want to, you know, scare kids, because he had designed the MRI machine. And these children are like terrified to go into it, right? And Jared Spool tells this story a lot better. But at the end of it, basically the whole thing is, the guy realized there could be a better experience for this for kids, right? And I took that away and going, that's what I want to do. Like, that's my thing. Like, I want people to look at a product or look at a website or look at even an experience and go, there's something about it that I love, but I don't know what it is. And that to me is good experience, right? That's good UX.
Sure.
People know bad design. People don't know why they like good design. Right. Sure. And so I ended up going from State Farm and basically learning everything I could, started doing contract work with a lot of big companies, and randomly. And at this point, I had met Mike Jones during this whole process of going from church to UX. And I remember, like, and this is the days where you could tweet somebody and be like, hey, this hang out, you know, or whatever, and not be weird. And, you know,
I feel like you can still do that.
Yeah. A little bit. Yeah.
I mean, it depends on who you're tweeting at.
That's true. Yeah. You know, not, yeah. Just watch the Twitter handle, I guess. Yeah.
Yeah.
And, so, I mean, during that time, it's like, I'm heading down to Florida, you know, and you know, anybody that lives in Atlanta, they know that they have to pass Columbus to go to Destin, right?
Sure.
You know, that's the way to the beach. And I remember, you know, tweeting Mike Jones and saying, hey, you know, I didn't even know anything about Creative South. I just knew Mike Jones because of his design, right? Mm-hmm. And all of his badges and all that kind of stuff. And, you know, in Mike Jones fashion, you know, what does he do? He's like, yeah. He's like, let's meet at IHOP. You know, I don't know why we didn't meet at Waffle House. We still scratch our heads over that, because that's all we eat when we hang out. But we met at IHOP in Columbus, and it was one of those conversations where Mike validated what I was wanting to do, right? Mm-hmm. And the whole point of that is, like, if you feel like you're trying to make that change, like, whether you're a graphic designer going to UX or, you know, interaction designer from After Effects, right? Find those people that were there before you, right? And, you know, I know Mike is not like a UX, you know, expert, but he was a design expert. He was somebody that was in the field. Mm-hmm. And I just remember him. He's like, you know, your gift is telling the story and connecting the pieces. And, you know, I will forever be, you know, grateful for, you know, Mike Jones, because, you know, one, I'm sitting on, you know, here talking to you, which is blowing my mind, because this, you know, 5 years ago, I didn't even know about Creative South.
Sure.
And now to see what Creative South is. And, but the whole idea of, you know, you can be a graphic designer, a print designer, or whatever, and you can put a good experience into any of it, right? Mm. For either your customers or your product design or your website. And, you know, I've been able to work with a lot of, when you see a design that you didn't intend to, you know, go anywhere, show up on the Apple stage, right?
Yeah.
On Apple keynote. That's when you start to, like, kind of flip out. You're just like, wait a minute, I worked on this whole process and this whole thing. And it's one of those things where, you know, you're never going to arrive, so to speak. You know,
sure.
You're always going to keep developing, but, you know, I've taken a lot of weird chances in my career. And, you know, it was, you know, this past year's Creative South, when I'm sitting at dinner, never met either of the two guys. And this is what I love about Creative South. Never met Brad Weaver or Matt Smith. And they're just letting some random dude eat dinner with them and pick their brain about design and running their own agency and, you know, what should I do and all that kind of stuff. And, you know, I ended up launching an agency at Creative South called Square Method. And I started to work with, like, all the, you know, I'm working on an app right now for Amazon. Like, that's what's insane. Like, you know, this company is like, hey, you know, having that happen, right, and taking that step, there's just this whole weird connection of experience that that ended me up here, right? It's just like you just keep going. So,
well, now that you've been on this path and you're starting your own company, what are the things you're wanting to do? Because I know you've been taking a lot more active role in, you know, design leadership and things like that. How is that different from what you were doing before, and how have you been able to parlay your past experience into what you're doing now?
Yeah. So I've always struggled being a designer and never had that leadership type person, right? Or anybody to bounce ideas off of.
I know that feeling well.
Yeah. And the thing is like, I'm not the best designer in the world, right? By far. Like I would say, you know, from a scale to 1 to 10, I'm maybe a 3 or 4, right?
Sure.
But I know how to tell the story and I know how to make things function. The thing is like, what got me into design leadership and really the mentorship of it is it became more of like a passion to see people strive with their goals and like, okay, I was talking to, you know, a guy a couple months back. He's like, you know, I want to get into UX. I don't know how to do that. And, you know, having that question of like, how do you get into it? I'm like, how do you not get into it? Right. I mean, it's like let's start by like, what kind of UX? Do you want to be a researcher? Do you want to be an interaction designer? Do you want to, you know, do you want to talk to customers? Like there's so many things. And I think, there's a lot of design leaders that are coming up that have a better voice right now. Like Stephen Gates. I don't know if you're familiar with him, but like,
I know the name.
He just signed on with Envision. He's like the head of design or something for Envision, and some really cool title that I could never carry. I don't even know what it is, but design of awesomeness. I don't know. But so, you know, he's really out there just talking about design leadership and how companies should take on design as the forefront of their thinking. Right.
Sure.
And so what I'm getting into is like, okay, there's mentorship. That's one type of design leadership. But the other type of design leadership that I'm really involved in and trying to develop is these startups and mid-sized companies, helping them realize, hey, design is a huge part of your product and it's a huge part of your audience. And that design leadership is what gets me passionate, right? Mm-hmm. It's really talking about, you know, this client that I have right now that's, they're, you know, working, on this really cool app. It's explaining to them, you can't have the same design from 1999. You have to at least bring it up to like 2010. Right. And
SharePoint 2004.
Right. Exactly. Exactly. And you're just sitting there and you're just thinking, you know, how do these people not know that? How do these companies not know that people pay for good design, right?
I fight that battle every day.
Yeah. And it's the good fight, right? It's the fight that we all have to fight of, you know, why is it not so obvious about design and function and experience, right? Mm-hmm. We could probably save this clip, right? The year 2020, I guarantee you, designers will have more of a voice than they do now, because what's going to happen is we have companies like Envision, companies like an Uber or an Airbnb or, you know, Google Material Design, those and even Apple, right? Apple being the forefront of it. At some point, people are going to realize what's making them so successful, right? And it's because there's design leaders there talking about the experience, talking about how things should feel, talking about, hey, it's probably not a good idea to throw up a crazy pop-up with this weird graphic. Let's think about it. You know, animated GIFs are great, but that's probably not the best one to throw up. You know, it's like good design is about
animated GIFs are fun. I don't know if they're great.
Exactly. It's just like those little things of helping companies understand what they're doing and why they should do it is what I'm really passionate about. And it's a lot. I mean, I'm getting to the point where I'm doing more of design sprints and more of the design methodology of like, okay, tell me about your product. Tell me about your, you know, tell me about your users or tell me about the problem. That's what I'm good at, is gathering that information. And then, you know, I don't make like legit wireframes. A lot of times I whiteboard and then go straight into mock-up phase, right?
Sure.
And then I hand it over to a really good UI designer. And, you know, the thing is like, know your strength, right? And that's part of design leadership too, is like, you can't be good at everything, right? Mm-hmm. And, you know, I get jealous, and it's probably weird because it probably sounds like a man crush at this point, but I get jealous of like Matt Smith, right? Matt's a fantastic designer, but he also can code the crap out of a website.
Yeah. And he's also good looking. So that just makes me hate him even more.
What? I mean, well, when I look at him, it's like looking into a mirror. I mean, it's really uncanny. It's just kind of, I mean, I don't know. He's okay looking.
When he looks at me, it's like him looking into a funhouse mirror.
Right.
It's the one that makes you shorter and heavier.
Yeah. I can't pull it. He's probably going to listen to this and block me from Instagram, but it's like, I'm just like, dude, you have hair that you're even winning. You're like winning right now just because you have hair. Right. But you know, you look at Matt Smith and, you know, he just came out with the icons, right? The 30,000 icons. Who does?
I'm still just in shock by that.
Yeah, exactly. But again, okay, if you're 20 something or even 30 something or 40 something, and you're looking at Matt Smith going, oh, I could do that. No, you can't. It took Matt years to get there, right? It took Mike Jones years to get where he's at today. You know, I blame where I'm at right now on Peter Del Tano, because, you know, in so many words, he told me my portfolio sucked and you need to improve it. He didn't say the word sucked. He just said, you know, what is this? You know, I interpreted it, what is this garbage? Right. So, and it caused me to look at my work and go, oh, I need to redo it. I blew up my portfolio, but it's surrounding yourself with people that are going to be honest. Right. And surrounding and looking at these other designers, you can't be a Matt Smith overnight. It's going to take years for you to be able to code like he does or design like he does, but he puts in the work, right? And nothing against these 6-week courses on UX. Those are fantastic. They're great intros, but you're not going to be a Jared Spool or Stephen Gates, you know, out of that, right?
Sure.
I'm not even on the scale, right? I've been doing it, you know, almost 10 years now. And it's like, I'm nowhere near the most talented or anywhere close to being a great UX designer or a great UI designer or anything. I'm just a great communicator and great storyteller. I mean,
yeah, but I think that's 90% of the job.
Yeah. Well, yeah, you're right.
I mean, that's the most difficult part of the job, is being able to communicate, especially if you're, you know, if you're doing that leadership stuff, you've got to be able to communicate to people who don't understand what we do.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, you know, perfect example. And, you know, I always say this is like a humble brag or whatever. I don't care. But, you know, I'm at Ernst & Young. I'm the assistant director for all their mobile apps. Right. Mm-hmm. And you're sitting there and you show them a design and they just look at you and go, what is this? And they just start to get so excited. They're like, what, we can do stuff like this? I'm like, yeah, why not? You know? And then you start to go, well, okay, we're going to design it this way. So how do you want to market it? Right. Mm-hmm. And they go, well, they're just kind of staring at me going, what do you mean market it? I'm like, well, you got 120,000 employees and you want them to use this app. How are you going to get them to know about it? Right. And I remember sitting in the room with all these VPs and executives and going, hey, why not use a thing like MailChimp to, like, you know, design a really good experiential email and say, hey, go download this app, or, you know, here's a good marketing thing. And Ernst & Young being as big as they are, now, not the whole company is not like this, just on the audit side, this very small team. They were like, wait a minute, so we can be creative about this and we can be intentional about it. I'm like, absolutely. And they've changed the way they do their process now because they know a new app is going to come out. They're already thinking about how they're going to promote it to their employees. They're already thinking about, you know, okay, well, when we start to do the next iteration, you know, how's it going to look? And, you know, I believe I had a huge part in that only because I showed them something they have never thought about before and they've mm-hmm. never seen. And it was funny. The app came out and the first version of the app was only 30% of their employees downloaded it. When the second app came out and the refresh and the marketing and everything else, I think somebody told me like 78% of people.
That's huge.
Yeah. And they're like, and I'm looking at the data and they're like, how did this happen? I'm like, all you did. And I told them, I was like, all you did.
You told people about it.
Yeah. You're being intentional. And you're also creating an app that's easy to use. Don't create something that's hard. Right. And it's not going to win any kind of design awards or anything like that. And, you know, if anybody, you know, that knows me or knows my design, I'm a very clean designer. Mm-hmm. I tell designers that work for me or designers that are around me that say, hey, look at this kind of stuff. And my first thing is like, be clear over cute because people don't get cute. Right. They get clear. Right. Right. And you can add the cuteness later once you're clear first. Right? And it's like, oh, we can do this crazy animation that we saw, you know, this Matt Smith's icons library thing did that we could do the same thing. Well, it's not going to fit for your experience. Right.
Sure.
You know, people are buying life insurance. They're not buying, you know, really great icons.
I mean, is it kind of with that stuff, does it boil down to constantly asking why?
Exactly.
I mean, why do you do this? Why are you doing this? Why? And how do you spin that where it doesn't come off as a negative, where you want them to ponder it versus a criticism?
Exactly. Yeah. So you hit it just right. And some people get it and some people don't. And I ask why all the time, right? They're just like, you know,
again, I work for an engineering firm.
Right.
Believe me.
Yeah.
They don't get it.
Yeah. They're just like, it's just because, right?
Yeah.
But I've learned the tact over the years of like, it's how you say it. You know, a lot of times people, I'll sit in a room and there will be somebody will be like, why'd you pick that color? You know?
Sure.
And it's like, you're sitting there and you're like, oh, don't say it that way. You know, yeah,
people automatically get defensive.
They get really defensive. And the way that I say it is like, hey, how did that color end up being? Like, tell me the story behind that. And come to find out, you hear the story of like, oh, well, we had this designer. He was really flaky. He showed up half the time. And this is what he gave us. Right. And we walked out of that meeting. And one of the stakeholders and VPs like pulled me inside. They're like, nobody's asked us to tell the story of why it was built that way. Nobody's mm-hmm. asked us, you know, how did we, you know, get such a crappy app? How did we end up here? Right.
Sure.
And so that's where the why comes into place of it's the tact, the way that you use it and mm-hmm. really just being personable. Right. And it's like, people want to tell you their story. People want to know, like why they're thinking the ways they're thinking. Right. And I told somebody the other day, I was like, if you want somebody to be a fan of you, talk about yourself. But if you want somebody to be a friend of you, ask them questions. Mm-hmm. And so when you start to think about that from a user standpoint, if you want a customer to use you as a designer, ask them questions, right?
Sure.
Not, oh yeah, did you see this ad that I did for Coca-Cola? It's amazing, right? And
right.
They're going to be like turned off and be like, I can't afford you. You just came out with all the guns and saying, I worked for Coke, I've worked at Nike and all this kind of stuff. But it's more the intentional of getting down and saying, hey, tell me about your brand. Tell me about your product. Tell me about who you are and who your customers are and start to grab all those things. People will pay more for those kind of questions versus here's the latest trend in design, and I'm going to squeeze it into what you're doing. And it's one of those things that I geek out on. And now there's a time and place to do trends and to be able to tell people, you know, this is where you need to go. That happens all the time. But when a medium or even a large size company comes to you and says, our user base is way low, what do we do? Don't go right into talking about, well, you need a really awesome looking header. Well, it's like, well, okay, great. You know, but how do I, I'm trying to get the clicks up, you know? Oh, well, if you want to click, you know, you need to have a button that's 60 pixels wide. Well, people don't care about that. It's like, no. I want to know why people aren't using your site. Is it communication? Is the, you know, because a wireframe can get the job done, right? People can use a wireframe in a prototype. So it's really just putting the paint over the top of the wireframe to make it look pretty. So think about the structure first, the foundation, and then put all the cuteness, the greatness, the gifts, and everything else that are intentional that just elevates the experience, right? I mean, not to go back on Matt Smith's thing, but his 30,000 icon website, it's amazing because I know exactly what's going on. Everything's intentional. All the scrolls, all the parallax, and all the animations make you want to buy it. That's intentional design. It's the whole experience, right? He just didn't throw up a site that says, hey, here's 30,000 icons. He designed a site, and I'm sure with other folks, of like, how can we make the experience for designers to crave this, right?
Sure.
And if we think that way with our customers and our clients or whoever, it's going to be a huge win. And I think in the next couple of years, I think a lot of people are going to, companies are going to like latch onto that and go, I need a good designer because I don't know where to take it from here.
Excuse me. So you touched on something there that made me think, and it kind of brings me back to Creative South, because with that, you know, asking questions and all that stuff, when I go to Creative South, the people that I end up talking to and the people that I end up wanting to have on the podcast and things like that aren't the people who tell me all about themselves. Mm. They're the people who come up and start asking me questions about myself. I think a good example of that is, well, there's two sides of it, and I'm not going to name names here, but there's one guy, I see him all the time, and I'm friends with him, and you know, our kids are about the same age and all that stuff. But every time I see him, he talks about himself. And every time I see him on the internet, he talks about, oh, this is this great gig that I landed, and you know, blah, blah, blah. And it's all self-promotion. Which, don't get me wrong, there is a time and place for that, and you do need to do that, but it doesn't need to be entirely what you do. And then there's this other guy who's, you know, well-respected, he's very versatile, all that. If you don't know him, you might think he's a little cocky and all that. But the first thing he does when he comes up to me is he asks me, how are you doing? Before I can even get a, like, hey, how are you out, he goes, hey, man, how are you? And then starts, like, asking about all this stuff that he remembers about me.
Right.
And it's like, and I've got a pretty good memory, but it's like stuff that I can't keep up with that I don't remember. I'm like,
yeah.
Yeah. Like, well, he knows my kids' names. I don't know his kids' names.
Right. Exactly. and that's what I love about Creative South is, you know, this is going to be a blanket statement, and maybe but you know who's there that is there for the camaraderie, the atmosphere. You know, and I'll be very, so this is a true lies come out kind of thing. I used to be the guy that talked about myself all the time, where I said,
sure.
And I remember being at a dinner party and they're like, oh, what have you been up to? I was like, oh yeah, man, I was just on tour. You know, I was just doing this stuff, you know, all that kind of stuff. And I remember walking out of this party and my wife grabbed my arm and looked at me and she's like, babe, you haven't been on tour for like almost a year. And I'm like, what? And she's like, stop impressing people because they don't care.
Yeah.
And I'm like, and you know, my wife is my biggest hero. Like it's all about family and hearing her say that and somebody being honest like that and going, people don't care about your brand, right? Mm. They care about you because, you know, I feel it was one of those things where, and it's one of those connections where you find something that you love to talk about the other people and find interest in them, you know, mm-hmm. It's a different thing. It's one of those things and this is how the only way I can relate it. Right. My son just turned 2 years old and It takes everything in me not to talk about my son. Right.
Sure.
And not talk about his just cuteness and just how adorable it is and the little fro that he has and all that kind of stuff. You know, just you talk about all those things and it's the excitement of like, you want to brag on your child, right?
Right.
When you talk to somebody, you want to brag on them. You just want to be like, you know, hey man, how's your kids doing? Is it Sally and Susie? Yeah. Oh yeah. It's great. You know, it's one of those intentional things because one day is going to come by and you're going to be like, oh, I'm going to call him because there's a project that he would be perfect for. Mm-hmm. And it's only because of the niceness and like the whole intentionality of like, I'm getting to know you, not because I'm going to benefit, but eventually you are going to benefit because you're being real and you're being honest in who you are. Mm-hmm. You know, and that's what I love about, you know, folks like Mike Jones and Peter Del Tano and you. I mean, John Howard is another one that's just such a great, John is just a great dude. And, you know, it's one of those things when you come across those designers or come across those people, let's not even call them designers. When you come across those people that are intentional, that truly care about you, man, you better keep them around. Right. Like I keep Mike Jones and Peter Del Tano and John Howard on my, like, I'm horrible at keeping up with people and texting and all that kind of stuff. And I'm just like, I don't want to lose them as friends. I don't want to lose them as contacts. Right. And
sure.
It's just one of those things where you keep the sincerity. Right. Mm-hmm. And, you know, not to be weird and connect it all back, but like people know when they're using something or doing something, there's intentionality and there's a reason behind it. And that's what makes everything like just good and awesome. Right. And It goes back to the church. When I worked at church, I wanted it to be intentional. I didn't want it to be manufactured. I didn't want it to be, you know, smoke and mirrors. I wanted you to feel something that you haven't felt before. And, you know, a higher being, spirit, whatever you want to call it. But at the same time, you walked out of the building knowing, man, something just happened. And you were just talking about that friend at Creative South. You walked away going, man, something just happened to me. And I don't know. Like, I want to hug this dude or like, I don't even know. Yep. Right. And it's like, I want to know more about him. He didn't even, you know. So, and that's what I just love about what I get to do on a daily basis is really talk about people and talk about their struggles, their, you know, hearing a customer go, hey, I just put all my money into this product and I don't know what to do. And you're having to kind of go, oh man, how do I turn this around? Right.
Yeah.
You're going to come across all those people. And I guarantee you, if you kind of like ask them questions and, you know, put yourself aside and start to take those steps, and you may lose money, you may not even get paid, but that work that you do that's intentional is probably going to be some of your best work.
Well, we're getting kind of close to our time here. I'm curious, you know, since we've been talking about intentionality and things like that, what are your next steps? What are you, What are you hoping to do? Where are you hoping to go?
So it's funny. I took it was kind of weird
to talk about.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. So I actually signed on full time with a client. So I'm back in the day job world. And it's one of the best feelings in the world. But then on the other side, Square Method is still kind of it's still going. And sure. Basically what I'm doing is working with companies that they need that design sprint, that design leadership stuff. I'll design it, right? And I'm trying to get a couple of jobs where I can bring in other people, other designers that are really good, like that are a lot better than me at it, you know, like a Peter Del Tano, right? And just say, hey, here's the wireframe. Here's this. Can you please make it look awesome? You know? So really for me, my next step is really just trying to be that people connector. You know, on one end, I'm like, am I looking for work? On the other end, I'm like, I just really want to strike up design leadership conversations or really just talk about UX and take on other UX projects that other people can do. And I can just help navigate. Like that would be my ideal world. Sure. But yeah, so the next steps for me is just really trying to figure out, how to really take this design leadership passion, the side of how to guide either the next generation of designers or the next generation of like products out there of, you know, how do we become a better product or how do we become a better company or, you know, all that kind of good stuff. So really just turning into a consultant, I guess that's a long winded way of saying being a consultant, but, just really doing that. And, I love what I do. I know I keep saying that, but, it's one of those things where you just kind of, you sit there and just go, wow, this is what I get to do. And, I'm sure there's going to be a season, that, okay, what is next? Am I still going to push pixels? Am I still going to do this kind of thing? So we'll see. I take it one year at a time. I kind of laugh at a 5-year plan. I think a lot of people, or even a 3-year plan at this point. Because it changes literally every year, it feels like. But yeah.
Yeah. I know the feeling. 5-year plans are, I can't do them. Things change too much.
Yeah. I'm not disciplined enough, to be honest. Yeah. I can't do it. Yeah.
Yep. Well, cool. Well, where can people find you online?
So I'm pretty lazy. So all I do is take pictures on Instagram of my kid. And so you can find me at Bearded Seabass. That's CBASS. So Instagram and then squaremethod.co. So if you need UX consulting help, I'm here to, you know, help. And yeah, listen, I mean, that's really, I love hearing about different companies and what they're doing. Cause there's some companies out there that I'm just like, people do that. So, but, that's the fun part. So, but, I'm pretty boring when it comes to social media and like where I'm at. So, but, Instagram and squaremethod.co.
Awesome. Chris, thanks so much for taking the time to chat with me again.
Yeah, man.
And go out and hug some necks.
Yeah, dude. Thanks, man.
All right. I'll talk to you soon. You can find out more about Chris on Twitter at Bearded Seabass. And be sure to check out the links in the show notes for more ways to keep up with him. You can keep up with the podcast on Twitter and Facebook at Creative SO Pod. And follow Creative South on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at Creative South GA over at CreativeSouth.com. And I'm at Jay Frostholm on Dribbble, Twitter, and Instagram.
Jack Prince is giving Creative South Podcast listeners 15% off all orders over $25 when you use promo code SOUTH15OFF at checkout. Visit jackprince.com for your next order of stickers, prints, or whatever you need today.
For a limited time, new Skillshare customers can get their first 3 months for just 99 cents to get unlimited access to thousands of classes when you sign up at Skillshare.com using promo code CreativeSouth. What are you waiting for? Start learning today. And remember, if you like the show, help support us over at patreon.com/CreativeSouth. And if you like the Creative South podcast, head over to iTunes, Stitcher, or Google Play Music. Rate us and leave a review. This helps more people find the podcast and allows us to keep getting awesome guests. Now go out and hug some necks.